Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED. From KQED in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. The number of unclaimed dead is rising in the U.S., people whose remains are never claimed by a willing or able next of kin. And in a new book called The Unclaimed, sociologists Pamela Prickett and Stefan Timmermans take a closer look at what happens to those remains in Los Angeles, learning the stories of the people who face death alone and finding, quote, the unclaimed in waiting are everywhere. The resident of the house on the block with the overgrown front yard. The quiet nursing home resident fighting tears after another Mother's Day without a phone call. We look at what we owe the unclaimed dead after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. What happens when we die alone and no one claims our remains? In Los Angeles, remains are ultimately cremated and buried in a mass grave, but as sociologists Pamela Prickett and Stefan Timmermans tell us, the process is more complicated and more meaningful than it may sound. Prickett and Timmermans spent a decade documenting the bureaucracy surrounding the unclaimed dead in L.A. County, learning the stories of who they were, and meeting the people who made sure they received a dignified burial. Their new book is called The Unclaimed: Abandonment and Hope in the City of Angels. Pamela Prickett is Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Amsterdam. Welcome to Forum, Pamela.
Thank you so much for having us.
Stefan Timmermans is Professor of Sociology at UCLA. Glad to have you too, Stefan.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, Pamela, let me start with you. About how many people's remains go unclaimed in Los Angeles every year?
Yeah, so it's approximately 2,000 people. If you consider there are a number of people who die, they're considered indigent, and they are cremated by the county, and their ashes held for 3 years and then interred in a mass grave in Boyle Heights. There's also, as our book explains, a number, 60 or so on average a year, who are part of that are people who die with assets. They have enough assets that they would receive a private funeral. And then there are a number of veterans who go unclaimed each year in Los Angeles County, and the coroner transfers their bodies to Riverside National Cemetery, where they do receive military burial.
And that number of unclaimed, it's rising in LA, and it's also rising across the country, right, Stefan?
Yes, indeed. We have to qualify this by saying that there's not one federal agency that keeps track of the unclaimed figures. But our own research in LA County sees a continuous increase over the last decades. And one of the states that keeps the best records, Maryland, had unclaimed figures of 2.1% in the year 2000. And now we're up to 4.5% of the people who die in Maryland who go unclaimed. And in addition, there's lots of stories of coroners and medical examiners, even funeral directors, who have boxes of unclaimed remains in storage, but they don't even know what to do with it across the country. And the National Cremation Society estimates that up to 2 million of these cremains may be left in the funeral homes. So what this really shows is that we have gone from bowling alone to dying alone and abandoned.
Pamela, help me understand why you think this number of unclaimed dead is steadily increasing.
Yeah, it's a great question and one that took us several years to sort of parse out. So when we entered this project, I'll admit, first of all, that this wasn't a topic that I had been thinking about, that had ever been on my mind. It was through somebody that I knew who was at risk of going unclaimed that I first even thought, what's going on? Like, what is an unclaimed death? And when I entered the project, I really thought this was going to be a story about poverty and inequality. And it is, that's definitely part of the picture. But if we look at the steady increase, so we took 40 years of cremation records from the Los Angeles County Crematorium, and we analyzed those with a demographer. And what we saw is there's been a steady increase. So it was 1.2% in the 1970s. We're up to beyond 3% at the turn of the century. And at the same time, when we looked at rates of poverty rates, we saw that the rates of unclaim did not fluctuate as poverty rates did. Mm-hmm. So it's not a simple story of it's just a matter of money. There's something really much more transformational about the American family that the unclaimed tell us about. And that is, you know, a number of changes to the structure and the demographics of the American family. And then I think what Stefan and I were probably most surprised about finding was just widespread estrangement. I mean, stories of ties that have withered years and sometimes decades earlier that have really come into kind of explaining why we are seeing so many people in America today going unclaimed.
Like the story of David, right, mm-hmm. Stefan, who went unclaimed. Can you just tell us a little bit about him?
Yes. So David is sort of our loner in the book. He's one of these men who believes in the rugged individualism. He's very nature-oriented. He, was in the military for a while, but then ended up in Los Angeles. And what you can see over time as he grows older and older, it's not only his physical circle that declines. So he initially has a Jeep and he drives around, but then he ends up going on a bicycle, eventually just do some walks, and then he lives in an apartment complex. His mobility is limited to the complex itself, but it's also his social circle that shrinks more and more over time. And at the end of his life, when he's about to die, he basically only has contact with a neighbor who helps him to do groceries, the manager of the complex that he's in, and then he makes some occasional phone calls to an ex-wife. But that's all the people in his life that are left.
Yeah. And it's interesting, Pamela, that you bring up estrangement, and you also brought up poverty. I know that poverty is not so much a factor, meaning that while it is, it didn't correlate with the increase in terms of the rates that we mm-hmm. were seeing. But how much does the cost, say, of a burial or funeral contribute to someone going unclaimed, you know, on top of maybe an estrangement or a weak tie?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, of course, money plays a factor here. The cost of a funeral, the average in America, is around $8,000. That's a considerable amount of money, right? And especially when a death is sudden, and to think about taking on that financial burden kind of unexpectedly, I want to point out that that's not an insignificant amount of money for many Americans. And so that is part of the story. I think what we saw, though, when, you know, we spent, you know, many months in the coroner's office in Los Angeles, we have looked at probate records, we've looked at over 600 deaths of unclaimed decedents over in depth. And what you find is that if you combine the cost of a funeral with the potential that, you know, maybe siblings fell out years ago and they're asked by the county, hey, will you claim your brother? By the way, this is going to cost thousands of dollars. That's when it becomes much more salient in many people's lives and in the stories that we read of like how the cost of the funeral is so cumbersome, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you haven't talked with your sibling or you haven't talked to Uncle Joe in 30 years, being asked to spend $8,000 or, you know, a couple of thousand dollars if you're doing a lower cost cremation and funeral, that is considerable, and we want to recognize that.
We're talking with Pamela Prickett and Stefan Timmermans, co-authors of the book The Unclaimed, that took a deep look at unclaimed remains in Los Angeles County. And I want to invite you, our listeners, to join this conversation. Is there someone you know or maybe have encountered in your community who you worry will die alone? Have you had to go through the process of claiming a deceased loved one, or maybe a friend, or maybe someone you didn't even know very well? What was that like? 866-733-6786, the number. You can reach us on our social channels at KQED Forum. You can call us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Actually, it's more like you can identify people, but there is a factor that if you are not a next of kin or a family member, that it's hard for you to actually claim remains, right, Stefan?
Yes, that's actually completely, and that's where estrangement also is so incredibly important, because government officials, by law, will be asking the legal next of kin to claim. And so, and they're very good at their job. So they have lots of databases. They even use genealogy databases to find who is the next of kin. And when they reach that person, they will ask, they will inform them of the death, and then they will ask them, are you ready to call a funeral home? And that's the moment of the truth. And it's like, many people will say yes, but the people who say no, that's where the estrangement is going to come in. And so what we see is that the way government officials are dealing with this this search for the next of kin, the quality of the relationship doesn't matter necessarily as much as the legal tie. So the consequence is that some people will be asked who are estranged, who have no relationship, haven't seen this person for years, decades. Other people, or left on very bad terms. We had lots of stories like that. Other people will be overlooked, people who might be able to step up, people who might be able to organize a funeral will not be asked to take on that, that last act.
Someone who was very close to the dead. We're coming up on a break, but Pamela, can you tell us quickly about Midge?
Absolutely. So Inez Midge Gonzalez, Midge was the chosen nickname that she went by, was a longtime resident of Los Angeles. She was born and raised in New Mexico, but she came out here on a stolen motorcycle decades earlier. And, you know, she was living in the last decade or so of her life, had been part of a church community in the Westchester community, Church of the Nazarene. And she was living in her van in the parking lot of the church, and the church had really embraced her, let her use the church facilities, you know, to cook. She used a neighbor's laundry and shower, and she was really ingrained into this community. And at one point, they decided, you know, we've got to get Midge out of the van. They got a church family to change, to convert their garage into an apartment for her, and the church paid for that renovation and to stock the apartment with furniture and an Apple TV. And you know, she got into this place and things were looking really great. She had a lot of health problems. And when she passed, the church community was ready to step up. But the County of Los Angeles found a legal next of kin and determined that they, the church, were not going to be eligible to claim Midge.
We're talking about what happens to unclaimed remains and why some people's remains go unclaimed with Pamela Prickett and Stefan Timmermans, and we'll have more with them and with you after the break. Stay with us. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. What happens when we die alone and no one claims our remains? A new book called The Unclaimed, Abandonment and Hope in the City of Angels, weaves together stories of people who face death alone in Los Angeles and now share a common grave. We're with the book's author, Stefan Timmermans, professor of sociology at UCLA, Pamela Prickett, associate professor of sociology at the University of Amsterdam. And we're with you, our listeners. Is there someone you know of or maybe have encountered in your community who you worry about dying alone. Have you ever had to go through the process of claiming a deceased loved one, maybe one you didn't even know very well? Why do you think the number of unclaimed dead is increasing? You can email your thoughts or questions to forum@kqed.org. Find us on our social channels. We're on Instagram. Our digital community is on Discord. We're on X, and you can find us at KQED Forum. You can call us 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. And let me go to Jay in Pleasanton. Jay, you're on.
Well, good morning. This interesting. This isn't something I'd given much thought to until I heard you guys talking about it. And a question occurred to me. Are you aware of any movements to allow people who have means to sort of adopt someone, for lack of a better word, and as they're making their own funeral plans for their own families, adopt someone like this who needs help? Mm. Is anyone doing that?
Pamela, Stefan, do you know?
I think this is a very difficult form of adoption because of the legal ramifications. So you actually have to go to court to bury somebody if there is a next of kin still available. However, so not all deaths are the same. And so some, we're talking mostly about adults here, but some babies have been abandoned as well. And we know that the coroner's office for a long time wanted to get them buried and tried to raise funds to organize burials for them. But it's definitely not a wide movement to adopt an unclaimed funeral.
Well, Beth writes, when I saw on Goodreads that The Unclaimed would be released today, I knew I wanted to buy the book. It literally brings me to tears to know that there are those who leave this world alone, and has me wondering, how can I become involved with giving them dignity in death? So if not, you know, adopting, for example, as Jay was asking, what are other ways if people want to, you know, help ensure or support dignity in death for the unclaimed? What can they do?
Oh, I love the question, and I love that people want to do something. That was one of the major motivations for Stefan and I to write this book. And the third part of our book really does shift to thinking about building a movement of coming together to honor and bring dignity to unclaimed deaths. And so there's a number of things that people can do. Depending on where you're located, you know, look up and see if there's already in place a burial ceremony or some sort of opportunity to honor the unclaimed. Maybe there's a burial in Los Angeles. We can talk about the Los Angeles County puts together this really beautiful interfaith ceremony every December. And, you know, that's, I think there's videos available online. I think it's a really touching ceremony in so many ways, multi-faith, multilingual. And then in other places throughout the country, there's different kinds of ceremonies. So sometimes they'll bring in interfaith elements, or sometimes they'll leave religion completely out of it. You know, there's stories of, you know, funeral homes that are stepping up to offer individual funerals for decedents who go unclaimed in counties where there's a smaller number. And so one of the first things you can do is just sort of get online and search, you know, for your county and who's in charge of handling unclaimed decedents, and make some phone calls and find out, you know, what's going on. And on our website, theunclaimedbook.com, we also have a getting involved page where we give you some tips so that you can, you know, think about, you know, who to contact and kind of the steps to go about. And we've seen, you know, people who feel moved by this problem, who want to do something, forming and dedicating their lives to it. I mean, I'm not asking you to, you know, give up your your career.
We have a listener who writes, Sally, I am an end-of-life doula and home funeral guide. I also teach others these skills and practices. I always include the program No One Dies Alone. Mm-hmm. It is founded by nurses who were too busy to be at the bedside when people died. I am sharing these with the intention that we see ourselves as a community who is responsible for caring for each other. So yeah, there are definitely people who are really committed and moved by this. And Pamela, you also mentioned this multi-faith ceremony. You talk about how LA does more than most when it comes to its unclaimed dead. So tell us a little bit more about the ceremony and also about Father Chris Ponette.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to start, but I'm going to toss it to Stefan because he's very passionate about Father Chris and about the ceremony. Yeah, so as I said, every December, Los Angeles County will put on this interfaith burial ceremony. And for many decades, this was not open to the public. Very little was done. It was maybe 5 minutes, and they'd have a chaplain from LACUSC County Hospital come over and, you know, say a few words, and then people, you know, kind of went on. And Father Chris, who is the head of the chaplaincy program at the county hospital, a little over a decade ago, decided that he wanted to do more for the unclaimed, and he wanted to open this up to the public. And so up until COVID, it was, you know, the numbers were rising, up to a couple of hundred or more people were showing up. And I think soon after I learned about this topic and I brought Stefan in, we went to the December 2015 ceremony. And Mina, I have to tell you, like, it was a life-changing experience. I had been living in Los Angeles, you know, for about a decade before, and I had never heard of this. And I come to this ceremony and I'm surrounded by strangers and we're all sharing an experiencing, you know, these strong emotions. Many people are, there's tears in their eyes. You can see they're visibly affected. And you're doing this together. You're strangers showing up for other strangers. And I remember telling Stefan that first year, like, where else in Los Angeles can you do this? You know, where you're not spending a bunch of money to be around other people, to go and do this and reaffirm and confirm humanity in this city, which doesn't always have the reputation of being the friendliest one, was really, I mean, for me, it was a transformative experience. And Stefan, I know it was similarly so for you.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, and Father Chris Ponette is the heart of this entire enterprise. And what's really interesting about him is that he, as a chaplain in a public county hospital, he probably will encounter some of these people who will be going unclaimed. So he sees them while they're alive and then dying, and then he organizes this service for them after they die. But indeed, the emotional aspect of this, of strangers burying strangers, people with whom they have no connection, it's extraordinarily meaningful for, I think, for the people being buried, but also for the people attending this kind of event, because you share the sorrow together, you take on the burden of grieving, but then you share it together, and it really brings people together in an unique way.
Well, I want to bring Arnoldo Casillas into the conversation, an attorney based in Los Angeles who has attended these ceremonies. Arnoldo, welcome to Forum.
Good morning, Nina. It's my pleasure to join. And after listening to Professor Prickett and Timmerman just, you know, review their history and the history of the unclaimed death decedents ceremony here in Los Angeles, it is so profoundly sad. And I think it was Professor Prickett who described it as strangers burying strangers. That fact, it makes you cry. It truly does. I learned of the events in a work-related kind of atmosphere. I was taking the deposition of a coroner, and I saw a flyer, and this was 2018-2019, and I was struck by the number of bodies that were going to be buried together, and this image of you know, 1,900 people together there in one grave, and, you know, obviously they're cremated remains, and, you know, what's left of you after cremation is about, I don't know, 4 or 5 pounds of you know, calcium, I guess, your bones. But I did read I think the prologue in the professor's book. And that sad image of these workers at our potter's field, so to speak, emptying these boxes of remains into a grave, and the dust kind of rising up just made it even more sad. But yeah. But I'm monopolizing things. I'm
no,
sorry.
No, not at all.
You answered. Had a question.
Well, you answered one of them. I was wondering what inspired you to visit, given the fact that yes, Pamela and Stefan, as they were undertaking this book, and it made sense. I just was curious what the inspiration was, and you explained that. I guess what I'm wondering now, obviously, it has tremendous emotional resonance to you, but what keeps you going back year after year?
I was raised Catholic, and my there was a principle of helping bury the dead, basically. Yeah. And obviously here you're not helping in kind of a material sense, but you're truly helping in a spiritual sense, and it's very rewarding, fulfilling in a spiritual way to be there. And again, I think Professor Prickett described it as a situation where there wasn't a dry eye in the place, and that's true. And it's in December. It's between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and that makes it even more profoundly sad. And usually there's been instances where, I mean, we've been burying people there in a thunderstorm. And, when you have that really bad inclement weather, it makes it even more satisfying and gratifying and fulfilling to be there helping, these strangers. And I never looked at them as strangers, but when Professor Prickett said strangers burying strangers, that just struck a deep chord, because truly these people were that. And, I thought of homeless people dying under a bridge, or, some abandoned child, or, some other indigent person suffering some, horrible demise, and you wish them well. I always recognize that all of these folks were once, newborn kids full of promise, who probably never expected to be where they ended up. And again, it's just so profoundly, horribly, terribly sad. One last thing, recently in Los Angeles County, they limited the number of attendees to 75. And I happened to just jump in as soon as they opened up the registration. But I understand that it filled up within a few minutes. I mean, I hate to call it the hottest ticket in town, but there is a great energy about this now here in LA, I believe.
Well, Arnoldo, thank you for sharing why you go, what your experiences has been, and your commitment to it. Arnoldo Casillas, an LA-based attorney who has been attending the multi-faith ceremony for the unclaimed. We're talking about the unclaimed with Pamela Prickett and Stefan Timmermans. Pamela Prickett is a associate professor of sociology at the University of Amsterdam, and Stefan Timmermans, professor of sociology at UCLA, and they're co-authors of the book, The Unclaimed. And you, our listeners, are joining the conversation. Let me turn to Sue now in Napa. Sue, you're on.
Hi. I'm immune compromised, and I don't want to be claimed, and I don't want the ceremonies after my death or all those words that people are saying, because I find it all hypocritical. I'm 100% isolated, and it's because my loved ones, family, best friends, they won't take precautions. They won't wear a mask to be around me today. And no one in the world right now will wear a mask to keep me safe. And so I find it all to be hypocritical that they want to do something after my death when they don't want to do something while I'm alive. And right now I am dying and no one is there because they won't wear a lousy mask and no one in my community will wear a mask.
Well, Sue, I thank you for calling and sharing that. I think that it's a really intense and complicated emotion to feel and very honest as well. And I guess one of the things that makes me think about, I mean, maybe if the circumstances were different, things would be different for Sue. But if you feel strongly about how you want your remains to be treated after you die, what can you do to make sure that's how it's done, Pamela? Because I think it could also help if you're feeling the opposite way of Sue.
Yeah, I'm going to toss it to Stefan in just a second. I just want to respond quickly to one thing that Sue said, and that is the importance of thinking about these deaths as a calling card for not just bestowing dignity on the people who have passed, but the living, right? To think about what could we be doing in our lives, what compromises could we be making for others in our communities that will help them to feel less alone. And even more critically, from a kind of social science perspective, to be less isolated, because there are so many ways in which social isolation is growing in this country, right? The Surgeon General has called it an epidemic. It's attributing, you know, it's been attributed to a number of health diseases and negative outcomes. So, you know, I do want to draw out what Sue said in terms of you know, bringing attention to the living and what we can do for them. There are also a few things that you can do if you want to avoid, you know, maybe ending up, say, at the Boyle Hearts ceremony. And Stefan, maybe you can share some of that.
Yeah, you can just make your wishes known and prepare documents that direct an executor of an estate. But I think the really important point, and I very much appreciate what Sue said here, is that, you know, we have been struck by how much government attention is being given to these people who have been invisible in life for many, many years. And so the call here is what the unclaimed tell us is that we don't want to wait till people die. We want to be there during life. So we want to make, you know, we want to think about, as Pamela said, addressing social isolation, strengthening and social safety net. We want to be there. So the unclaimed bring up this phenomenon of estrangement, and it's almost like a barometer.
Yes.
It's a barometer of family relationships. But the real challenge that the unclaimed pose for us is like, what can we do in life to avoid ending up unclaimed?
Well, you say in your book, the unclaimed bring today's fractured families into sharp focus. And I think that's true. We're talking about the unclaimed, what they teach us about what we owe people who die, but also what we owe people who are alive, the living today, who are vulnerable. Stay with us for more after the break. I'm Mina Kim.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking with Pamela Prickett and Stefan Timmermans, professors of sociology, Pamela at the University of Amsterdam, Stefan at UCLA, and co-authors of the book The Unclaimed, Abandonment and Hope in the City of Angels. And we're hearing from you, our listeners. If there is someone you know or encounter that you worry about dying alone, maybe this is you. Have you ever had to go through the process of claiming a deceased loved one? What do you think we owe our unclaimed dead? Why do you think the number of unclaimed dead is rising? Email address is forum@kqed.org. Our phone number is 866-733-6786. You can reach us on our social channels at KQED Forum. Let me go to Heather next in San Francisco. Heather, you're on.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment. I'm a nurse, and so I've seen this play out frequently in the hospital. And now I'm also an instructor. And so I think what I've learned is that it's about normalizing the conversation early on. When I speak with my students about their loved ones, they don't know what anyone's wishes are. And I encourage them to start those conversations. And I think that, you know, we avoid these conversations because people don't want to talk about death. They're like, oh, I don't want to upset anyone at the, you know, holiday function. But I think if we can reframe it so that people understand that you're really giving someone a gift by helping them understand your wishes, because what I see on the other side is the inordinate amount of strain and emotional distress that is caused when people don't know what to do. And on top of the grief, there's guilt and there's, you know, fear of mismanaging things. And so if we can help people to understand that this is something we can give each other, not something that we use to distress each other, then we can avoid a lot of these unnecessary instances.
Heather, thanks for that. I mean, Erin writes, as a childless woman, how can I avoid this happening to me? I have strong ties with friends, but it sounds like my friends will be prevented from burying me if a next of kin is found. Viola writes, I wonder, as a single childless immigrant, if I myself will go unclaimed just based on the circumstances. Any thoughts for Erin or Viola, Pamela or Stefan?
I think the idea of giving your family a gift by discussing what you would like to be done at the end of life and for a funeral, I think that's right on target. That's 100% the way to think about it. It's not about just getting rid of stuff or getting rid of a body, but really thinking about what does it mean for the living? Because these funerals are for the living, of course. They're not for the deceased. I mean, LA County could just put all these cremains in a mass grave and bury and not do a ceremony, but the ceremony just changes so much and becomes so incredibly meaningful for the community. I think in terms of the what you can do to take steps for yourself is you can appoint somebody to be your executor, and that person will have priority over the next of kin. The difficulty is that very few people do this, but maybe this conversation is a wake-up call for people who might feel that they're at risk and they do have friends. So this is, as the first caller said, it's like the gift is opening up the conversation and making arrangements that are aligned with what you want, but also aligned with the people you love and the people who are going to be left behind.
Pamela, did working on this book force you to take stock of the strength of your own family ties?
Well, that's a complicated question in so many ways. Yeah, so absolutely. You cannot do a book like this and work on it for, you know, 8+ years and not be confronted at many different points with, you know, what does this say about your own kind of individual life? I think, you know, like the caller, you know, callers have expressed, I think one thing that I have just has really unsettled me is this notion that my chosen family, my deep friendships of, in this case, 30+ years, are people for whom, you know, the law would not pay attention to. They wouldn't even ask. I mean, we talked about David, you know, he winds up with a very lonely private funeral and nobody is there, nobody that knew him, even those three people were invited. And that's you know, sort of terrifying. So in addition to sort of thinking about, you know, advanced directives or appointing executors, I mean, I would love for us to sort of change our laws to recognize the deeply meaningful connections of alternative family forms in which in my life, that's hugely important. I think also, you know, I hope, maybe Stefan, do you agree? It's made me a better mom. I mean,
we are so much better with our kids because we know that they will have the final word. So we're trying to be as kind and friendly with all three of them.
Yeah.
Well, this listener writes, the situation with the dead being unclaimed does not surprise me. This is what our society does sometimes. Last spring, as my mom was in the hospital after a fall, she was not going to get better and was going into hospice. She had two adult children to visit her and deal with her death. Sorting out her apartment took about a week for me and a month for my sibling. In the room next door, the door was open and the woman in that room kept saying, "No, Daddy, no, no, Daddy, no," over and over again, nonstop. We never saw anyone visit her. I always wonder if she died alone, and if she died, did anyone that she knew take care of her death? I wrote my will a few years ago and recently bought a sizable life insurance policy to pay for things to be taken care of. But I have doubts that people will do the right thing, even if they are paid to do it. There are a couple of questions that your book asks. Pressing existential questions, I think you described them as, that this raises. One is what the way we dispose of human remains says or reflects about our own humanity. Do you want to say more about that?
Yeah, I mean, the word human, the Latin root for it is actually to bury. Burying is what sets us apart. And so to let people go unclaimed with the person who we assume it has the responsibility for burying, that's a really big step. That's a strong sign of the current state of our society. But as we say, the book has the subtitle is Abandonment and Hope. But there's also hope if the community can rise up and stand in the gap left by the family. So, you know, it cuts both ways in that sense.
The other question you ask is, if you die and no one mourns you, did your life have meaning? Say more about that, Pamela or Stefan.
Yeah, so it's a question that the unclaimed, you know, raise for us, right? To claim, you know, is to sort of to stake something for somebody, right? And so if you don't have anybody there calling out for you, what does it say about the life lived? Now, obviously, we tell the story. We talked about Midge earlier, right? It's not to say Midge wasn't mourned. She was deeply mourned. I mean, everybody we spoke to, even years later, had tears in their eyes when talking about Midge and when thinking about her. So it's not to say that, you know, her life didn't matter, but I do think that when it comes to asking, will you have somebody there for you, it is a really potentially haunting question, and we hope one that sort of generates conversation, right? That's what we're really hoping to do with this book is get people talking. You know, we talk about at the end of the book, we have this saying, this proverb that's been used in movies and art and throughout literature. You know, they say we die twice, once when the breath leaves our body, and again, when nobody else says our names. So thinking about who's going to keep saying your name after you're gone, and what do you want them to be saying about you, right? I think that's an opportunity. I hope it's an opportunity for people to think about, you know, what matters in life, because it's definitely not the stuff you take away with you. We have just seen so many families torn apart by stuff and fighting over estates and wanting the money and nothing to do with the body. And I don't know, that to me is one of the things that has haunted me more, is to sort of see that. And you know, just want to encourage people that it's really not about the stuff that you squirrel away. It's about the social connections, the meanings to those relationships that you've had in life.
Yeah, you talk about how when you started this project and approached next of kin who did not claim, you said you did so with some judgment, but then you've sort of changed your mind. What happened for you, Pamela?
So in the course of writing this book, so I said I thought I came into this book thinking it was going to be one about inequality and poverty, and it became one about estrangement. In the course of writing this book about estrangement, I then became estranged from my own father, which is what I think you're referring to, because that's when I talk about it at the end of the book. And so, you know, I have learned from writing this book, one of about 67 million Americans who are estranged from a close relative. And moments like death, as well as birth and marriage and these kind of critical life course events, you know, they have a way of bringing attention to that disconnect and, you know, not really knowing, well, what does this mean? Like, what do we still owe each other as family if we're not acting like family on a daily basis? And so I'm hoping that, you know, in the course of just sort of talking about it for my own self and talking to and studying the unclaimed and talking to the relatives of the unclaimed, I know it's helped me to just sort of deal and process with my own grief over that. And I'm, as I do talk to people, I hear more and more people telling me stories. I mean, nearly everyone these days seems to tell me a story of someone in their life from whom they're estranged. And we've got to think about what that means. Like, you know, what does an America in which 67 million of us not really sure what family owes each other, what is that going to look like?
Let me remind listeners, you are listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Let me go to Alice in Coloma. Alice, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to share, this is a little tangent because it's not about being abandoned, but there's an organization here in California called Five Wishes, and it has an exhaustive questionnaire that they provide for a very small fee that you can indicate all of the things that are important to you of how you would like your body handled when you pass, how you would like to be respected, even down to if you want music played, you can choose songs. So it prompts you to think of all these questions that you might not otherwise think of things that might be important to you. And it even has additionally advanced directives that can be notarized and are legal here in California. So it's a really incredible resource for people that are not sure how they want to proceed looking at their end of life and that sort of thing. So it is not about being abandoned necessarily, but friends of mine and I have all filled these out and we've shared them with each other and named each other as executors so that if our family is not around or there's not, you know, someone there to claim you necessarily, that you can have that indicated in there. And the other thing I just wanted to comment about is that I wasn't sure. My brother lives overseas and my sister is halfway across the country. I wasn't sure about my own self being the oldest of my siblings. So I prepaid for my burial at a funeral home where my family are located and even bought my own tombstone. I picked out the rock and everything so that it wouldn't be a burden for my family to have to take care of those things. So that was my comment. Thank you.
Well, Alice, thank you. Thank you for calling. Sally writes, California is the only state where the Advanced Healthcare Directive gives authority over the care of your body to your healthcare agent or durable power of attorney. In other words, a loved one can have authority over your disposition without going to court. Another listener writes, my neighbor who lived alone in our apartment complex died at the hospital. I'd gone to see him days earlier to get his truck and dog, which were parked at the hospital. I shared next of kin info with the hospital. The nephew flew in from out of state and had his uncle cremated, but asked me to pick them up and scatter them wherever. My neighbor was single most of his life and never married. Most of his friends had died from AIDS decades back, and though he rarely talked about it, I sensed those profound losses never left him. He was very isolated. You talk about the people who within the system, and it may feel like a bureaucratic system, care deeply for how we treat the unclaimed dead. And I'm wondering if you just want to share anything that you learn from them because you followed them through their processes or a reflection that they have made about their work that has stayed with you, Stefan or Pamela?
Yeah, I mean, we had the opportunity to observe many people in the county, so people in the medical examiner coroner's office who were just utmost professionals going about, you know, very difficult work. I mean, they're dealing every day with the worst deaths possible and, you know, telling us, you know, sort of asking them their life lessons, right, how they reflect and what they do in their own lives. We also had the privilege of getting to know two gentlemen at the county cemetery and crematorium in Boyle Heights, and we write about them at length in the book, and that's what, you know, is the sort of opening scene, because they're the ones who cremate the bodies for the county and combine the ashes in that grave. And they're just beautiful souls who, I think from them, I learned that, you know, there is so much value in bringing dignity every day to people who have nobody else, and they take that very seriously, and they're very warm with the families who show up. Stefan, what do you think?
No, I completely agree with Pamela. So again, this is these are overworked county officials who have, you know, who are probably underpaid as well, and definitely underappreciated because their work is behind the scenes. And so what we were struck by is how much care they provide and how they have completely oriented towards engaging with relatives in the kindest, most gentle way possible. And, you know, both Craig and Albert and the people in the notification unit, they're really trying to ease the burden for relatives within a very small space of what they're able to do. But, you know, we sat next to them when they talked to them on the phone, and you could just see how their voice became just much calmer and gentle, and how they took all the time the relatives needed to hear the bad news, because of course it is bad news. And then we're also struck by how incredibly hard that kind of job is, because they're doing really as Pamela said, the worst deaths. Especially the scene investigators, they're called out all over the county, and there's not a good story there. There's just always bad stories.
Is your book in part a way of bringing out their work, but also bringing out the unclaimed? Do you feel like the unclaimed have essentially been hidden from us?
They're an enigma. Nobody knows about them. They were already invisible in life. And even the county officials, I just said that they're very engaged and friendly. They're very task focused. So nobody knows the full story. Their only job is to notify the next of kin. Identify the body as well, and then notify the next of kin. So they're very small. Nobody really knows the story. So the Boyle Heights ceremony has politicians talking at the beginning, and the broadest, they talk about the unclaimed as the broadest way. And the fact that actually we see that more and more people can become unclaimed, people with homes, people with families, people with assets, people with jobs, shows that this could actually happen to us. They're not as far away from us as we think.
Well, thank you for bringing them to us and for forcing us to reckon with how we can do better for people in life. Pamela Prickett, Stefan Timmermans, the book is The Unclaimed. My thanks to Mark Nieto for producing today's segment and for the listeners for sharing such honest reflections. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.